Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
I don't know, Aaron. I don't know. I think I might have still liked the reluctant astronaut music better.
I think I'm with you on that one, too.
Oh, gee. Well, good afternoon, everybody, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the June 26th edition in the year 2010 of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, in case you did miss last week's show, we celebrated the first anniversary of Space Talk, and at the request of my wife on that special day, we did select a new opening theme song, which you are now hearing and is soon going to be fading to non-existence. But in keeping with our space-related program, we did wind up selecting a song, and it was called, what you're hearing now is called Super Rocket Rumble by a group known as Man or Astro Man. And, you know, I wanted the theme music from The Reluctant Astronaut starring Don Knotts, but even though I'm the host, I was overruled last week by my three guests and my wife, Dawn, and probably a few other people, too. So, anyway, there you go, Super Rocket Rumble, now the official new theme song as we kick off the second year of programming here on Space Talk here on WMMB. And today, to begin, I guess maybe it's our new season. I don't know if that really applies, but in any case, longtime veteran from the Kennedy Space Center and one of the hardest working retirees I've ever known, Charlie Mars, is going to be with us, and we will get to him and his story in just a few moments. Wanted to talk a little bit about what's been happening in space this week. One of the most interesting things that I've come across is this little blow up here that we've had about China's involvement in the space program. How do you feel about that? 321-768-1240 is the number to get in touch with us here in the studio with your questions or comments about anything having to do with the space program. And as we talk with our guest, anything you might want to ask him a little bit later. And star 1240 is the AT&T wireless number for local Space Coast residents to call and get plugged in right here to the studio. And if you happen to be listening to streaming audio online at WMMBAM.com, and you're more comfortable with the computer, well, then give us a call by sending us or give us a question or comment by emailing spacetalking@AOL.com, and you can get email to us right here in the studio. Well, again, China, what happened here this past week was that in a space conference over in St. Petersburg, the head of the Russian space program basically said that they had invited China to be a part of the International Space Station program, and that they had not yet responded. China had not yet responded to that invitation, and it wasn't very clear from those reports I read anyway whether or not Russia had unilaterally made that request or if that was on behalf of the entire space station partners, all of them. And of course, NASA almost immediately came out with a statement that said, no, China had not been invited, and that's not something that's in work. And yet at the same time, folks out of the European Space Agency went public and said that they would welcome the idea of the Chinese becoming a part of the space station program. So it has just opened up a flurry of conversation about the appropriateness of that. I don't really have an opinion quite yet. I got to think a little bit more about it. But this has been something that's been brewing for a long time now. Of course, China does have the ability to put humans into space and return them safely with their Shenzhou spacecraft. And, you know, they put one guy up, they put two guys up, and, you know, they're working to continue to expand their ability to get in and out of low Earth orbit. And the thinking in here, at least is what the Russian Space Agency guy was saying, was that, look, you know, when shuttle retires and we only rely on the Soyuz, That's not a good thing, he's saying. And you know what? He's right. We should not be relying on only one vehicle. We should have multiple ways to get our people up there and back. But, you know, if the shuttle's not flying and the U.S. doesn't have or is not maintaining its own capability, which, again, is a whole other can of worms that I'm happy to get into, then what are you stuck with? And look, you know, you look around the planet and the only other nation, the only other spacecraft, the only other player in town is China. And, you know, that's a delicate relationship. That's an interesting relationship. And there's political things, there's economic considerations, there's the idea that space is something that should be unifying the planet, and we should all be working there together in peace. And certainly the United States and the Soviet Union found a way to do that with this Apollo-Soyuz test project. But and now we work with them, you know, with the fall of communism. But, boy, it could go either way. It could go either way. And I'm just not so sure of the appropriateness of it yet. And I'm not convinced the vehicle is absolutely safe yet to fly. I mean, they've done it a few times, but it doesn't have in any way, shape, or form the experience base. I mean, heck, Mercury's flown more than Shenzhou has so far. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out in the near future. Other news that happened this week, too, that I want to keep you up to date on is that it is essentially a done deal now that the space shuttle missions are going to be extended into next year. Discovery and Endeavour left to fly, and we've been talking about this, and NASA's been talking about this for some time now. But what's happening here is that with certainly because of a technical problem that's causing Discovery's three main engines to be pulled out and their turbopumps replaced and put back together again, there's already a technical reason to make this happen. There's payload issues as well in terms of one of the payloads that the shuttle is supposed to carry up to the space station. And so for all these reasons, they're now coming together, and it's looking now very much like Discovery will fly in sometime in October, and then Endeavour will fly probably sometime next February. And so those missions are now officially moving out into the next fiscal year and into the next calendar year. The unknown factor still is Atlantis. And whether or not it will fly that final mission, perhaps in the April time frame of next year, a cargo mission to the space station with the four astronauts, Kennedy Space Center and other planners are moving forward with putting together the plan for that flight, figuring out what they want to carry, what they want to put up there, and but so far no firm decision yet on exactly when they want to. They make that decision as to what's happening, and related to that too, there's also been not really any developments, but a stir of news, a stir of interest again in the nation, in the space community, about where the three orbiters are going to wind up after they're retired. This past week, the Seattle Museum of Flight, I guess they broke ground for a new facility. A big glass enclosure that can hold a space shuttle orbiter. And essentially they're betting that they're going to get one, and they're starting to build the building that's going to house it. Even if they don't get one, they say there's other uses for it, but they feel like they need to show that they're interested, they're serious, and they're going to have the capability to put one on display. And so, as we've talked about through the last few weeks and months, you've got a situation where Discovery is definitely going to the Air and Space Museum up in Washington when it gets done flying. And then you've got Endeavour and Atlantis left over to be put on display somewhere in some 20 different museums around the nation would like a crack at that. And, of course, KSC is we think we'll definitely get one. And then we say, well, where do you leave the other one? We got let's say we keep Endeavour here, send Atlantis to where? Ohio, to the Air Force Museum. You send it to Johnson Space Center. You send it to Seattle. And then since the Air and Space Museum is getting Discovery, then that leaves Enterprise to go somewhere. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see where this all shakes out. That decision could come anytime. I mean, within days or within weeks. And so it's going to come fast. Keep your thoughts positive that we're going to get one here. But when we return from this break, we're going to be joined by Charlie Mars as Space Talk continues, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
If it's happening in space, Jim Behnke is there. Okay, well, not in space, but he's all about it. This is Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back again to this June 26th edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. And again, I do invite you to participate in today's program. Again, if you have any space-related questions or comments, you can hook up with us by calling 321-768-1240, as always, from anywhere you are. Local Space Coast customers of AT&T Wireless can always punch in star 1240 on their cell phones and make a free phone call to the studio here. And again, if you're more comfortable with email, then the address to use is spacetalking@aol.com. And that'll show up right here on the screen to my right, and we'll get your question on the air as soon as we can. Well, my guest today in the studio is Charlie Mars, a longtime veteran of the Kennedy Space Center who has worked on everything from Project Mercury on through the space shuttle. And he's had a lot of various different jobs along the way, notably to me anyway, chief project engineer for launch operations. He's worked lunar module. He's worked hardware. Deputy director of safety and mission assurance was his most recent job when he retired from NASA in 1997. Since then, he has become the driving force behind the U.S. Spacewalk of Fame and Museum operation in Titusville. In 2004, he earned a Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Space Club Florida Committee, where he and I both continue to serve on the board of directors. And I'll say one more nice thing about him. In Gene Thomas's 2006 book, Some Trust in Chariots, Gene summed up Charlie this way, quote, "You can say Charlie has been everywhere and done it all. He is by far the best planner NASA KSC ever employed. He can see future needs, dream of results, and make the dreams reality," end quote. And certainly a proof of that can be seen right now along the Indian River in Titusville. And Charlie, welcome to Space Talk. Glad to have you here.
Thank you, Jim, very much.
Well, let's spend some moments talking about the legendary Charlie Mars, which my old friend Milt Salmon, God rest his soul, would have said is a fitting name. The guy's got Mars in his name, and he works in space. He would have written a whole bunch of columns on it, and I know he did. Let's talk about you. Talk about when did you first show up here, and what are some of the jobs you have held over the years?
I showed up at Mercury 9. That was Gordon Cooper's flight. And from there, went directly into the Gemini program.
Yeah.
And went to St. Louis to help accept Gemini 2 and 3. Okay. I was lead fire and sequential system engineer for Gemini 3. And somebody liked me because they immediately put me on the Apollo program after the launch of Gemini 3.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I got to know John Young and Gus Grissom and John a lot better.
Right.
Went into the Apollo program at the right time because we were having design reviews. And we would go out and we had our counterparts at JSC from design. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our counterparts from Rockwell. And at that time, we had a very, I don't want to call it loose, but a very informal set of ways to do business. It wasn't up the chain of command and vote by committee. But the managers at that time would look at two system engineers, a NASA system engineer and a contractor system engineer, mm-hmm. and basically would accept their word, you know, for how we're going to do procedures, for how we did troubleshooting, for what modifications the spacecraft need.
Those days have been described as days when you have a problem, you looked at each other, you grabbed your roll of duct tape, it didn't need a committee, it didn't need a staff, it didn't need a hearing in Congress, you just went and fixed it.
We did. And we could do that in St. Louis, and we also did it once we got here at KSC.
Yeah.
But Apollo was by far my most enjoyable program.
And that was part of the excitement. Was that the president's vision? Was that you were all into it? The inertia had begun. I mean, why was it so exciting? Was it just the idea that you were going to the moon?
That was the big idea. Something nobody had ever done before. And we were there. We were young. We were very passionate about what we were doing. And the time to be in history and the place to be. We didn't want to go home at night.
Yeah.
We wanted to continue that job. Couldn't wait to get to work in the mornings.
Did you feel the awe and wonder as you were doing it, or did you have to wait for those quiet moments, or even after, maybe even years later, you realize, my gosh, look at what we did do?
I think when it really hit most of us was when Neil Armstrong was going down to the moon,
yeah,
and Aldrin was counting off So much fuel. We held our breaths.
Yeah.
When it was finally, the Eagle has landed, that's when it came. That's when the whole reality of what we'd been doing hit us.
Wow. Wow. And talk a little bit about, you know, you came here in 63 and you went right to work for NASA, I understand. What was that path like for you? I mean, you grew up loving aviation. You fell in love with science fiction. I mean, what was your story that sent you toward the space program?
Well, actually, I was working for Martin Orlando, and I'd been there for 4 years working on missiles, you know, okay. The LaCrosse, Pershing.
Okay.
And we would look across in the evenings when the launches went, say, man, that has got to be fun.
Okay.
So, you know, we immediately started trying to get over here. And fortunately, I had a guy that came that was my boss at Martin, and he helped me get on back in 63.
Well, and so talk about those days, you know, and the camaraderie and even a little bit about what was going on the Space Coast at the time. You know, you worked hard, you played hard.
Well, one thing about it was I stayed away from Cocoa Beach because Cocoa Beach was Sin City. And I'm telling you, literally, that's what it was.
Really?
And most of us who had any sense at all stayed in Titusville.
Okay. A little calmer.
We seldom went down on the beach because it was temptation, I'm telling you.
Well, and a lot of people, of course, and maybe I dream a genie, I don't know, but a lot of people just automatically link Cocoa Beach with the space program. And Titusville, not so much, really. It was kind of this sleepy little town across the river, and really that's where Kennedy Space Center, that's where it is.
Well, and that's what the people of Titusville wanted. They wanted it to stay that sleepy little town that they liked.
Yeah.
But there was enough of us there that it didn't stay that way. But it was just, there was an air of unreality during those days because it was the first astronauts we had, and they were heroes for not just this nation, but the world. And any time they were around, it was movie time.
Wow. And you, of course, you know, moving past its success, post-Apollo and the dive, and even after Challenger, you know, Titusville definitely hurt. You're facing some of the same issues today. Talk about what you're feeling today versus what it was like back then.
Well, I feel a lot more secure, obviously, because I am retired and have other things. But even at that time with NASA, I felt secure because we went on from Apollo to the next program.
Mm-hmm.
But after Apollo, Brevard County was basically devastated. And my brother being one of the ones that gave his house away, just gave it away so he could go back to Birmingham.
Oh, wow. And now that's a common story. You know, there was just no other work.
Very much. And we're going to face the same thing again.
Well, talk about where, you know, your generation, you guys that did Apollo, you guys that were there in the trenches when we made that history. You must be watching what's going on now and just can't believe what you're seeing.
We can't, and some of the astronauts, as a matter of fact, have really summed up a lot of what we are thinking. And the latest John Glenn epistle that came out was quite good. Walt Cunningham, months ago, came out with a very good article about trying to preserve our preeminence in space, in manned space and exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil Armstrong came out, same way. So most of the astronauts, not all, but most of them, are appalled at the tack that we're now taking.
And don't you think there's a way that we could bring that sense of exploration and that vision back to what we're doing and still do some of these other things? I mean, it just seems like this proposal, this idea where we're heading is so close to being, you know, there's a lot of good there, but it's just missing something. And I've never really been able to figure out other than, unless it's just straight PR and all about messaging, I don't know, but there's a piece of this missing.
Well, the piece that's missing is backing from the administration. If we don't have backing for the administration and they have the vision that keeps us preeminent in manned space exploration, we're not going to make it happen because they are not going to back it.
Yeah. Yeah, and you hope that we can get that happening and a whole new group of people, a whole new generation of folks can do what you guys did. And I want to be a little more positive here now at the end as we get to the end of this segment. Charlie, talk about some of your fondest memories. You mentioned Apollo 11 and that day of the moon landing. What were some of the other highlights that you can remember? Some really neat, fun things that happened out here.
Well, a highlight, obviously, is Apollo 13.
Okay.
And Fred Hayes, good friend of mine. We've been friends since, oh my God, Grumman and Beth Page on early lunar modules. And when I was called to come out, I thought I was going to go listen to the death of three astronauts.
Mm.
And very quickly, though, you know, we saw what had been going on as using the lunar module as a lifeboat. And as a matter of fact, we participated very strongly at KSC with Grumman and Rockwell in mainly how to power the command service module from the lunar module. So we could do that before we tried to power things up and try and get the batteries back up to peak. And we pretty well put that together here with the team and fed that to Houston. And we also worked on the putting the boxes all together so that, you know, we could get a round canister and a square hole.
Okay, yeah.
People worked on that all over.
Sure.
But we fed everything to Houston, and it all went through them. Give them a lot of credit.
And, of course, at that time, there was an astronaut training facility here with simulators for the command module, lunar module. So I imagine those were hot and heavy being used.
You know, I don't remember they being a lot hot and heavy here. I know they were in Houston.
Okay. Well, look, let's pause right there, and we need to stand by, Charlie, as we're going to continue our conversation in just a few moments as we talk about the Spacewalk of Fame and Museum that Charlie's all about. And for now, it is time to stop the clocks for our five-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. Space Talk is brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
Be here for the heroes in orange jumpsuits.
Be here to feed your curiosity.
Be here for the goosebumps.
Major goosebumps.
Be here for the eye-opening.
Jaw-dropping.
Excitement.
Of exploring space.
Be here for a day of fun.
And a lifetime of inspiration.
Be here at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. From now until July 11th, stop by participating McDonald's restaurants for a coupon worth $5 off your admission to Kennedy Space Center.
Back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
Welcome back to the second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, I hope you're listening carefully to those advertisements here in the last couple of minutes. I do want to take a moment and acknowledge that the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, operated by Delaware North, is now an official Space Talk advertiser. And while the advertising certainly does support the continued broadcast of this program, I just want to say that I really believe it also reinforces their strong commitment not only to the space program, but also to the space program's importance here to the local community. And so a special thank you to Bill Moore and his team over there for their continued support of this program and of the space program here in our local community. We're talking today to the legendary Charlie Mars, a guy that it is definitely tough to say no to when he comes calling, and I'm certainly glad he didn't say no to me when we invited him to be on the show today. You can ask Charlie, it's not too late, to give us a call, have a question, make a comment. The number is always 321-768-1240. Star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. Our email address is spacetalking@aol.com. Well, Charlie, we're talking about the good old days, and the good old days need to be remembered and serve as inspiration for the future. You've done a yeoman's effort. In fact, there's probably a better word than that to keep the history alive and use it to inspire people. Anybody who visits Titusville can cruise up and down the parks there along the Indian River and see the result of Charlie's work and the work of his team and colleagues with the Spacewalk of Fame. And talk a little bit about how that came about and kind of what the whole goal is there for you.
Okay, how it came about, back in the 90s, one of the doctors in Titusville, Dr. Doyle Chastain, went out to California. He saw stars, handprints in the sidewalks. Had this brilliant idea, since we were straight across from Kennedy Space Center, let's come back and do the same thing in Titusville. And he would get his doctor friends to help fund. Two huge mistakes. His doctor friend says, "What are you talking about? Not me."
Yeah.
City of Titusville says, "You got to be out of your mind. We're not tearing up our sidewalks."
Right.
But they did think about it and created the Spacewalk of Fame to go and bring in money to put up the monuments in the park. And the city of Titusville would put in the parks, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it really got started.
And let me ask you, from the beginning, had it always been that you would do Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, or did it just start Mercury because there was an anniversary coming up?
Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, Shuttle,
okay.
Space Station, and unmanned launches.
Okay. Really? And unmanned launches?
And unmanned.
Because now I know about Shuttle, but I haven't seen anything, you know, conceptual yet about Space Station or unmanned, and that's yet to come.
Now, what we did when we looked at it realistically, based both money and time, we combined Apollo to be not only the missions to the moon,
mm-hmm.
but ASTP as well as Skylab.
Skylab. Mm-hmm.
So that was all Apollo.
Okay.
And some people fail to realize the last Apollo shot, which was ASTP,
right.
was in truth the first international mission, all in that one shot.
Sure.
For Shuttle, we pretty much are at the point that we're going to try and combine Space Station. It's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have Shuttle in work now. As a matter of fact, we have money set aside for that. And it will follow the theme that Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo has done, take the patch for that program and basically do that in stainless steel and mm-hmm. put it on a mount that, in the case of Apollo, was bronze.
And in the Shuttle patch, are you talking about the blue triangle one, the
yes.
Space Transportation System, the original one?
Yep, the triangle with the Shuttle in the middle.
The one that was supposed to be the only patch ever used for Shuttle until John Young and Crippen said, no, we want our own patch?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's cool. That's cool. So go back a little bit now into history and talk about Mercury, because my favorite story about Mercury is, as we've talked before, about how that monument actually got made. You have the Mercury Monument out of Complex 14. It's been there for mm-hmm. years. And, Charlie, I'll tell you, when I was a kid growing up in Minnesota, my mother had a friend. I was always interested in space. And my mother had a friend who visited down here and bought one of these little postcard packets, you know, these little 9 postcards that are all attached together and fold in on itself over a map of the Cape, and mailed it home to me to Minnesota. And when I opened up, it's that famous Mercury Monument picture with the orange sky in the background, mm-hmm. okay? And that just riveted me. I mean, that stayed on my wall for years and years and years. And, of course, when I got to see the Mercury Monument for real on a tour, that was the greatest thing in the world. So when you guys come along and do this replica where the public can see it anytime they want, I thought was the greatest thing. And so I followed that story. I wrote about it in Florida Today. And talk real quickly about the story about how the folks that built the original monument did the new one.
That was Sanmar Steel in Pennsylvania. That's basically a grandfather, father, and son. And we're now dealing with a son, Rodney. And Rodney gave us the stainless for Apollo. But if you go back to Mercury, our guy at the time was Cal Fowler. He was helping out a lot. And Cal got in with the Sanmar family. And they went back and found the drawings and design for the one on Apollo 14. And they donated that stainless for Mercury. They've also donated the stainless for Gemini and Apollo.
Wow. And really, I guess I didn't ever realize that. They've followed through as a family.
They followed through as a family.
Oh, that's great. Well, I know that when the call went up to them to do the Mercury Monument, and just could they be involved, could they, whatever, they actually went into the attic, I believe, of the office, and the grandson found the blueprints, all the drawings, and all the hoopla of the first one being mm-hmm. built, because the grandfather had saved it as being so historic. And they were able to pull out and redesign, or not redesign, but basically remanufacture the thing based on the original. So you got an exact duplicate.
Yes, we did.
And, of course, as nice as it is at Complex 14, you added more stuff to it that makes it even more interesting.
Well, what the Space Walk of Fame decided to do, and this is based on Dr. Chastain's desire, is we would get the handprints of all the astronauts that we could in mm-hmm. clay and turn them into bronze, which we did. So we've got all of the astronauts through Apollo have their handprints in bronze, except those who died. And those we have a raised profile done by our artist, Sandy Storm, in Merritt Island. And she also did the big bronzes for the Apollo.
Okay. And so Mercury came, and the guys came, and it was a big deal. Then Gemini, a few mm-hmm. years later. Walk us through the timing of when everything kind of opened. Can you remember?
Well, when I came on board in about 2000, a friend of mine called after I'd been off doing things and said he needed help getting the astronaut signatures. And I had worked with most of those guys through Gemini and Apollo, and I thought that'd be a great thing to do. So I joined the Space Walk of Fame to do that.
Mm-hmm.
4.5 years later, I finally got the last handprint of the living Apollo astronauts.
Okay.
And that was Dave Scott.
Okay. And they come in literally like Grumman's Chinese Theater and yes. lay their hands down in there. And
we prepare about a 12 by 14 pallet with clay and go to them. They put their hands in the clay. Of course, I help them by pounding on them. I always got to say, I'm the only guy to beat on them astronauts. They didn't beat me back up.
That's right.
But it was a long time. Some of them took a long time to get. Frank Borman took 3 trips. I went all the way to Arizona to get him, and he was gone.
So what's the reception been like? City of Titusville is certainly glad that they did this. They're getting some people. What do you hear about this? What's the reception to all this from the people, the workers?
The people that we see, plus the workers and the retirees, they're in awe sometimes of what they see. And here's Neil Armstrong's handprints. And you can go put your hands in those handprints right there at the Apollo and Gemini.
Yeah.
I've actually seen people come up to those handprints and not put their hands in the print, but hold them over them.
Oh, they're too afraid to touch
it. And we
it.
Go say, you know, go ahead, put your hands on it. It's bronze. It's not going to hurt it.
Yeah. That's amazing. And so, and free of charge, obviously, it's just sitting out in the park. It's sitting out in the open. And talk about, kind of where they're spaced out. I don't know if people are familiar with Titusville, and you come to town, where are you going to find them? Talk about where they're all at.
If you come up US 1 from the south and you get to Main Street, which is downtown little bitty Titusville, and you turn right on Main Street and you go right to the river, and our monuments are there on the river in Spaceview Park, and our museum is right there at the end of Main Street.
At the end of Main Street now.
End of Main Street.
Okay. And we're going to talk about, let's start talking about the museum a little bit too, but before we do that, I do want to follow up on the plans ahead now for Monument. You've got these obelisks out there. You've got shuttle in work. Where are you at in your needs for that, and how soon before we might start building
on the shuttle? We do have our concept. We've got a lot of folks helping this time. We've got more helping this time than we really had on Apollo.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, John McBride and Bob Springer, two of the local astronauts, are on our board. We've got about $40,000 set aside to start that. But it's going to cost $500,000 to complete.
Okay.
And it's going to be a very large base. It'll be a 12 by 12 base. It'll be granite, and it will have drawings on the granite similar to what we've got on the bronze for Apollo. But the big bronze panels on Apollo cost us 8 years.
Wow.
And it was just very laborious. Our artist fell down and broke her legs and was out of work for a year.
Jeez.
The place we had for the monument was sold to a private individual. So we had our setbacks. But this time, we're going to try and still do a wonderful job. And we're going to try and make it not quite so expensive, because prices have increased drastically.
Oh, I can only imagine. And there's talk about, and we've got about 10, 15 seconds here. Talk about, did you have like a reflecting pool or something in one of your drawings?
No.
No?
We are at the downtown Stormwater Park. There is a pool there, but that's what it's used for.
Oh, okay. Well, it looked good in the drawing, I'll tell you.
Not exactly a reflecting pool.
Oh, good. Well, hey, look, Charlie, we're going to take a final break here. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the Space Museum he's got up there in Titusville and talk about what you can see and do up there. Still time to give us a call, 768-1240, star 1240, if you want to get on board. But in the meantime, we're going to do this final break. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Again, I'm Jim Bankey, and as always, you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
My mother's going to think we're using this bumper music because she asked for it last week. If I let this go for like 3 minutes there, and she would just love it, and just stop talking, but can't do that. Welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's, first edition of the new year of Space Talk, a new season, I guess, if you will, sponsored by United Space Alliance and our friend Charlie Mars from the Space Walk of Fame here for just a couple of minutes left, Charlie. Again, talk about now the Space Walk of Fame Museum that you have. Where is it? What's in it? How can people get to it?
Hey, the museum was started back about 6 or 7 years ago when some of us decided we wanted to bring some memorabilia down. Bob Seek, myself, the fellow that has died since. Jack Weakland.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us basically brought things in for the museum. It exploded. We let people know that we were looking for the memorabilia. When husbands would leave towns, wives would show up with boxes and say, take this quick before he comes back.
From the closet.
So we have ended up, we had over 10,000 square feet of models and things that people actually work with. We kind of look at ourselves at a workers' museum. You can touch a lot of the stuff we have there. We have John Glenn's hard hat that he wore on Mercury.
Okay.
Guy brought it in one day, said, I've had this for 30 years. Would you like to have it? We also have Rocco Patron's hat. If people remember Rocco Patron, they found that in a garbage can once as they were walking out.
Tell people who Rocco was.
And Rocco Patron was legendary.
Yes, he was.
He was the launch director at Kennedy through Apollo. He went on up to headquarters and ended up being director of Marshall Space Flight Center. Just a marvelous guy. I really got to where I really respected Rocco.
So stuff in this museum is just, it's not your standard museum wear. It's not in a glass case necessarily.
Some is in a glass case, but a lot of it's not. We have signs that actually say, please touch.
Yeah.
We've got the hand controllers for the crawler transporter. And that these are the hand controllers that sent the Saturns out to the pad. And we've got, the kids can touch those. We've also got over a dozen racks that came out of Pad 36.
Okay.
They're Atlas Centaur racks used for 42 years.
Wow.
And when they quit using those, one of our guys, one of our volunteers, put those racks in. And we got them, and we wired up those 12 so the kids can come in and throw the switches, see the lights change, put on headsets. They love it.
This is a lot more than just someone's pile of patches or pins.
Much, much more.
You know, and it's free.
It is a free museum.
You like donations?
I like donations, and we do have a gift shop.
Okay.
And our gift shop is compatible. You know, it's we're certainly not trying to overcharge. We're just trying to use that to help operations.
Right, right. And talk about exactly where it is.
The museum is at 4 Main Street in Titusville. And here again, if you go to Titusville on US 1 and you turn toward the river on Main Street, we're at the end of Main Street on the north corner.
And is it a standalone building? I mean, I've been there, but I mean, talk about, you know, it's clearly marked, obviously.
Yeah, it's a standalone building, and we've got US Space Walk of Fame on the south side, and on the east, there is the Atlas Centaur sign that we took off the pad.
Sure. So, you know, it's one of the... I don't want to say it's a best-kept secret, but it certainly is kind of tucked in there somewhere where if you aren't going to it, you're not necessarily going to run into it by accident. You really need to go to it. You really need to know it's there.
It's kind of like Casadega. It's just out of the way. But once you get to know where it is.
It's really neat. Well, that's great. And as we wrap up with you here now, Charlie, talk about what people can do to help. And more importantly, how can they get a hold of you and, you know, I'll say it, they need money. You need money. You need donations to do what you're doing and keep doing it. You know, where should the checks get sent?
Donations are excellent, and they should be sent to the Space Walk of Fame at 4 Main Street in Titusville. We could stand volunteers, especially for the next two launches. The last launch was unbelievable at the amount of people that were there.
Oh, really? So you actually could use some warm bodies just to kind of help move people around and be hosts? And
we sell things at the launches to help in operating costs.
Okay.
And we can always use volunteers in the museum itself.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Well, Charlie, thanks for spending time with me today and talking about this stuff. I can't tell you how important it is what you're doing to the community, for the community, not only for Titusville, but for the space community as well. And, you know, the more people that can see this. You know, you go spend a day at the visitor complex is great. You know, this is that other piece of it that people need to go and spend time at, and all the more reason to spend more time here in Brevard County when you're visiting.
We've actually had people come by the museum and said if they'd have known we were there, they would have come to us instead. Because we're free.
You're free. That's right. That's right. Well, they certainly do compliment each other. So, again, thanks a lot, and best wishes. And, of course, we'll continue to work with you and help you anytime again.
It's been my pleasure.
Good. Thanks. Thanks, Charlie. Well, look, in our final moments here, we're just going to remind you about a couple of things I want to call your attention to. Once again, the next planned launch from the Cape, targeted for July 30th, when an Atlas V rocket is set to launch from Complex 41. The payload is a brand-new type of military communications satellite, And the launch time that day is 8:05 in the morning. So we've got a little ways to wait for the next launch here, another month to go. But we'll look forward to that one. If you do want to see something in the sky before then, I highly encourage you to keep an eye on the sky tonight. The International Space Station, as it constantly flies over the planet, moves in and out of our night and morning sky all the time. And there happens to be an incredibly great opportunity to see the space station tonight. At 8:54 is generally the time, plus or minus a minute. The 8:54 time is for Melbourne, but as you move up and down the space coast, it might change by a few seconds, a couple of minutes at the most. But in any case, looking up at the sky, basically from the west-southwest to the north-northeast, basically southwest-northeast, for 4 minutes this thing is going to take to pass over the sky. At its highest point in the sky, it'll be 53 degrees above the horizon, which, you know, is essentially looking up. I know straight up is 90, but, you know, basically 53 to 90 without any frame of reference, you're basically looking up. And 4 minutes this thing is going to take to pass at 8:54. Very cool. Tomorrow at morning, if you want to get up tomorrow morning early, 4:58, almost the exact same thing. So 8:54 tonight, 4:58 tomorrow. We'll post these numbers on our website at WMMBAM.com, keyword space talk. Good opportunity to go up and see the station. Realize that when you see this star flying overhead, six people are inside that thing, 200 miles up, moving 5 miles a second. So it's really something special. Next week is the July 4th holiday weekend. So not only will I be observing my annual ritual of watching Independence Day on DVD and the moon's footprints being vibrated away, but I will be enjoying a rare weekend getaway with Mrs. Banky. So for next week's edition of Space Talk, I am going to stretch my radio producing and audio editing skills and create a best of Space Talk that we'll use with the clips from the first year. So hopefully you can look forward to that and give it a listen and hear some highlights from some of our guests during the first year of Space Talk right here on WMMB. That is it for today. Thanks for listening. Space Talk is sponsored by United Space Alliance and is a production of Myla Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer for the show. I'm Jim Banky, and we will talk to you again real soon. Now, the Home Mortgage Law Show is next, and followed by Dan Connery, live and local at 4 p.m. right here on WMMB. Have a great week. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks.